Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the Music Biz Podcast, presented by HypeBot.com. I'm your host, Courtney Harding. Today on the show, we're talking with D.A. Wallach, who is a recording artist, songwriter, and the artist-in-residence at Spotify. In addition to that, he invests in and advises several startup technology companies, including SpaceX, Doctor on Demand, Ripple Labs, and Daiquiri. D.A. is the author of the influential essay, Bitcoin for Rockstars, and we're going to chat with him about why Bitcoin and the blockchain might just be the solution for some of the industry's biggest problems. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe to the Music Biz Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also follow the show and get the latest episodes on SoundCloud. And if you really love the show and want to go above and beyond, it would be great if you could rate us highly and submit a review in iTunes. For any of our listeners who aren't familiar with terms like the blockchain and Bitcoin, can you give us an explanation of what they are and how you think they relate to the music business?
The blockchain has become, in the popular parlance, a more general term, but in its original incarnation is basically the technical decentralized platform upon which Bitcoin operates. And Bitcoin is a very specific application that allows people to trade and exchange a purely digital currency. So Bitcoin itself is a currency, and it's also a protocol that allows people to move that currency around and maintain a ledger that keeps track of who owns how much of that currency. Blockchain is sort of the under-the-hood mechanism by which it operates. And what's interesting about this as it relates to music and the idea that I sort of honed in on with the essay you mentioned is that Bitcoin found a way to basically do currency without needing to trust any central authority. So currency right now is done by pretty much every nation in the world, in certain cases consortiums of nations like the EU share a currency, or the European Union rather. But in each of those instances, it's required that the people using the currency trust a government or trust a single issuer to maintain that currency. Whereas Bitcoin figured out a way of creating a currency for people in the world that didn't require them to trust any single authority. And that was sort of its major philosophical innovation. And what I thought was that in the music industry, we have a number of problems that for a number of reasons can't be resolved because people don't trust each other and have trouble cooperating. And so it occurred to me that you might be able to use a technical approach like that used in Bitcoin in order to help people cooperate and solve certain significant problems in the music industry.
One of the biggest problems with digital music is that so much of the metadata around the recorded music is incorrect or incomplete. How could Bitcoin solve for this? And what challenges would there be in terms of making sure that the data up on the blockchain is correct?
Let's talk about the way this is done right now in the world, which is highly disorganized and fragmented. So it is a fact that a given song was written by somebody and recorded by a particular artist. And there are a bunch of other facts about any given song or a recording of a song that are pretty uncontroversial. Who wrote it? Who owns the rights to it? And for any given song, as you know, and as many of the listeners probably know, there are a huge number of different rights. So there are rights that the person who created it owns in the actual recording. There are rights that the songwriter owns in the song itself that underlies the recording. There are rights that enable one to perform that song live or in broadcast forums like radio or television. And right now, the information about these facts, literally just the factual truths about these songs, who owns them, these recordings and who owns them and so forth, are maintained in a number of very fragmented databases. So in each country, there might be rights societies like ASCAP or BMI or a society like Harry Fox in the United States that maintain some of the information. There might be governmental copyright offices that contain other information. There are record labels that have some of the information, but nobody really talks to each other. And so if you or I, Courtney, wanted to find out who owns all of the rights related to a particular song, it would be really difficult for us to get that information. And it's not organized even as well as almost everything that we expect to be able to access through a search engine like Google. You know, if you want to know the temperature in a city, or if you want to know who the president of a country was, other facts about reality, we've gotten pretty good as a civilization at organizing and structuring that data so that it can be accessible by anyone. But this particular class of data around who owns what in music has yet to be organized in that way. And so what I've really been proposing is that it would be a great thing if everybody could work together to create a single database that contains all of this factual information. And then the notion of involving blockchain or a decentralized architecture in doing this is that if you did it that way, people wouldn't have to trust each other. And there's a bit of a fear right now that for anyone who has a partial amount of this data, that giving it to other folks would amount to giving up some business advantage or some proprietary value. When my claim is that these are facts about the world, it helps everyone if they're easily accessible and are well organized, and we could really use a solution that gets everyone working on the same database.
Why do you think this would be better as opposed to something like the Global Repertoire Database, which was kind of tried to replicate that and actually just completely flopped? Why do you think this would solve that problem, whereas the GRD couldn't?
Well, I'm sure folks who were actually involved in the GRD would have a much more nuanced answer than I do, and I don't know all the facts about how that came together. It strikes me as having been a really good-willed effort with plenty of competent people involved, but ultimately it seems that it may have failed because they couldn't sort of get everybody to cooperate. And the premise of my argument is that Bitcoin is really a major global success at getting people to cooperate around a very difficult problem, currency, and that if Bitcoin can has found a solution for getting people to cooperate about something as contested as currency and the way a currency is valued, then doing so for music may make it a lot easier than the approach that the GRD was taking, as an example.
I think one of the problems that I mentioned earlier was the fact that so much of this data right now is incomplete or it's incorrect. And the joke that I've heard many, many times, it's been told at SoundExchange and any number of other places, is, you know, if you want to really get rich in the music industry, you start a band called Various Artists and you release a song called Untitled Track and you watch the money roll in, because, you know, there's just so much shoddy bookkeeping that's gone on. And in the case of a lot of labels, I mean, they probably make sure that their top-level catalog has the correct metadata. They probably don't see a real return on investment for making sure that an album that sold 2,000 copies in 1973 is tagged correctly in Spotify or Apple Music or, you know, pick your service. So is there a way that doing this on the blockchain could potentially make that easier or make it more open to different contributors, or just sort of solve for the fact that, you know, it's not just that the data isn't in a place, it's that the data sometimes doesn't even exist?
Well, you know, I don't think that there's ever a way of escaping a need for people with all of their human faults to need to maintain something like this. In other words, people are always going to need to be entering this data at some point when they release music or when they write a song or otherwise. And the question is, how do you make it easy for the people who have the greatest interest in these facts being accurately represented to ensure that they are? So right now, to your point, a songwriter, of course, cares deeply that their work is accurately represented and that when people use that work, they get paid and get credited for it. But right now, they have to be reliant upon a publishing company if they have one, or a rights society like ASCAP if they're affiliated with it, to do all of this work of basically naming them and associating them with this work throughout the world. And I think with a decentralized structure like what I'm advocating, you would enable each individual creator to be in charge of their own information. And so, while it may not be a big deal to Universal Music Group that album that sold 2,000 copies in 1970 is up to date, it may be a bigger deal to the folks who made that album. And right now, they have no way of personally managing the data about their work in the world. With a system like what we're talking about, they would have the ability to weigh in on the record of what they've created and who owns those compositions or those recordings.
So how would that work then? So let's say, you know, I'm a singer-songwriter and I want to update my own material or my own sort of entries. That's great. But, you know, there's probably plenty of people who would immediately say like, oh, I'm going to pretend to be Justin Bieber and, you know, mess with the data. I mean, Wikipedia, for instance, has safeguards in place where it's a very open system and that kind of cuts down on people goofing with things. So how does it work on the blockchain in terms of making sure that the data is actually correct and not just people trying to mess around?
The right approach is something along the lines of what you're talking about with Wikipedia. Either you have to have some formal kind of policing mechanisms, or what you can do is associate a sort of confidence level with each piece of data. So, well, there's never going to be 100% certainty that something is true. If Justin Bieber himself and his record label and his manager and his publishing company and his rights society have all confirmed that the same record is, in their view, correct, anyone wanting to use that music could have a high degree of confidence in the reality of that information. So I guess what I would envision is a system where multiple parties can weigh in on a piece of factual data. And the more people who weigh in on it and the more credible those parties are, the higher a sort of truth rating a particular thing would have. You think about Yelp or something. This is roughly how things are managed in that type of environment where, you know, someone who's reviewed thousands of restaurants, if they post a review, you know, it sort of has a higher confidence level associated with it.
How about for international artists and especially those from, say, the developing world? Because, again, if people think that the issues with data are bad in the US and Canada and Western Europe, they probably haven't seen anything when it comes to, say, Nigeria or certain Latin countries or any countries that are, you know, really vibrant, interesting music scenes, but might not have the best infrastructure. So how could building on the blockchain help enable artists from more developing markets to really, again, sort of claim their own music and monetize their music?
It's a tricky point I'm going to make, but my belief is that we're moving to a single world in many different ways and across many different layers of society. And in particular, with something like a digital music service like Spotify, I think it's very easy to imagine that 10 years from now, there's one catalog of music that's available to everybody on Earth on basically the same terms. And I think that would be actually a great thing for global music culture and for artists everywhere. And so right now, all of the various intermediaries that I've mentioned, record labels, publishers, rights societies, are basically operating in a regional model where even, you know, a global music company like Universal Music that I'm signed to, I'm signed to a label called Harvest here in the United States that they own. If it's released through Universal in another country, it will be released through a subsidiary label in that market. And this just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I would envision a world of digital music where a song put out in one country at one moment is available everywhere else at that same moment. And similarly, a world in which the amount that people pay for music across the world is basically consistent. So what I would love to see is a rights management and payment infrastructure along the lines that we're discussing that operates globally, that treats every artist and creator around the world as an equal, and that allows payments to flow frictionlessly around the globe instantaneously.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly like the vision of the future that I have and certainly what I hope plays out, because to me it's insane that like Spotify is not in a lot of countries still. And, you know, or Apple Music or Beats or not Beats, but Deezer. I mean, any of these services, I'm just using Spotify as an example. But, you know, the fact that everything is so regional and the only place where you can go hear everything right now is YouTube. That's the only place where I could go if I heard about a cool K-pop band or a cool, you know, South African indie rock band or, you know, fill in the blank. And that's because it's so user-driven. Half the time, it's not even the artists that are uploading. And I think that, yeah, this potentially is, you know, a viable solution for getting everyone on the same page and then sort of moving away from sort of the idea of Western music being pop and other music being world music or international music or
absolutely,
however you want to categorize it. There are a lot of artists who are angry at streaming services, whether they're sort of justified or not or correct or not, because they feel like there's a lack of transparency in terms of how their payouts are calculated. And even with the understanding that the payouts flow through the labels, you know, if you're an artist, it's still frustrating to get a check for $7.22 and just sort of shrug and, okay, that's it. That's my money. I don't know how I got this money. So, you know, if you look at, say, smart contracts being uploaded to the blockchain and those being the back end for paying out artist royalties, do you think that's a potential solution?
Absolutely. In my mind, the way this should work is that when somebody plays a song on Spotify or Apple Music or any other service, the service instantly issues a payment, even if it's just a fraction of a cent, to whoever owns the various rights in that piece of music. And equally instantaneously, that payment should be split out among the various folks who are entitled to a piece of it. So if there's a record label, the label would take its cut instantaneously. The artist would get paid at the same time. Everyone would basically be paid at the same time at the moment that the consumer enjoys a piece of music. And this would not only bring a much greater speed to payments to artists, but it would also enable folks to have a much more granular understanding of how they're making money. You could even imagine this ultimately getting to the point where the artist gets a payment and sees who played the song. And so I think we're moving to a real-time world, both in areas like music and in medicine, which is another area I invest in, and many other sectors. It just makes sense that now that we have the tools to pay people instantly and to route payments really intelligently between multiple parties, that we would do so.
But I feel like on the other side, and again, I'm a supporter of this, but I do feel like there's a lot of skepticism about Bitcoin and about the blockchain. And I think, you know, a lot of people read the New Yorker article about Bitcoin and the sort of weird dealings that have gone down, and people see the Silk Road and they think, oh, Bitcoin is the currency that you use to buy heroin on the internet or hire a hitman on the internet. And, you know, I do feel like Bitcoin has not gone very mainstream. So, you know, obviously people are going to argue that when you start talking about Bitcoin and blockchain and music. So what are some of the counter arguments or the defenses of Bitcoin and the blockchain that you would offer?
I mean, the first thing I'd say is that this is a underground nerd culture technical innovation that, because it offered the prospect of making people rich overnight, generated a huge amount of mainstream media attention. So other similarly revolutionary technical steps forward never get the same kind of press that Bitcoin got. This just became a household name overnight, even though the technology was still and remains still in its infancy. So the first point I'd make is that if this all is going anywhere and is going to become really significant, it's going to happen over the course of 10 or 20 years. It's not like this is something people invented yesterday and it's going to change the world tomorrow. The technical underpinnings of Bitcoin and blockchain are ideas that have been, you know, circulating for decades at this point. But folks finally figured out a really clever way of making it scale. And so really rapidly, you saw Bitcoin sort of succeed and come onto the scene as the first kind of mainstream decentralized application. And so the second point I'll make is that any solutions that take a sort of decentralized approach, which is what I'm proposing, they don't necessarily need to be a copy of Bitcoin. They don't necessarily need to be built on the Bitcoin blockchain. This is a paradigmatic idea that applications that we all want to use are possible in a structure that isn't controlled by a single party. So right now, most of the valuable services that we use on the internet, Facebook, Twitter, Gmail, These are all services that are controlled by individual corporations that have total autonomy over the direction in which they develop. And that's not to say that the companies are doing a bad job of it. I have enormous regard for all of those businesses and their products, which I think are great. But it is to say that maybe in the future, it's possible to build some of these things in such a way that they aren't controlled by an individual corporation or person. And that might ultimately be a better model for some of the things we have to do as a people. And in particular, things like currency or managing intellectual property, which is what we're talking about, might be really efficiently accomplished in the sort of way that I'm describing.
If this ever becomes what people are doing, if this ever becomes the reality and the new normal, what do you think the timing for that is? Do you think it's, you know, in 5 years people are going to start coming around to this? In 10 years, is it going to take 20 years? Like, how, because this isn't going to happen overnight. I mean, there's people working on this right now and they're great, but it's not like we're going to wake up in 2 months and everyone's catalog is on the blockchain.
I also don't think this is inevitable. I think it's a really good idea. I think people should do it, but you know, so is stopping global warming. There are a lot of good ideas out there that don't come to fruition because the right people don't work at them at the right time. And my hope here is that enough excitement is sort of circulating that people will develop solutions that even in a piecemeal way start bringing us towards this future. So I could envision a trajectory that over the next 5 to 10 years moves the entire industry over to decentralized payment and rights management infrastructure. Again, not inevitable, but if the right people put in the right amount of work and target it in the strategic way, it's totally possible in my view.
Are there any artists actually using the blockchain to post their data that you know about?
You know, not that I'm aware of as of yet, but Imogen Heap has been really excited about these ideas, and Zoe Keating, who's always a really innovative thinker, has been talking about some of this stuff as well. And I believe that Imogen might be quite soon doing some stuff around this. She's holding an event in London where I think she's going to talk a lot about blockchain and decentralized architectures for these sorts of music-related issues. And if I recall correctly, she's thinking about using some of her own music or data as a case study and how this can be done. And I would be totally up for that with my music as well.
Why haven't you put your own music up there? Is it something that it's just not technically possible at this point, or your bandmates have been skeptical about it, or?
There's not an interface and infrastructure for it yet. So I haven't as of yet seen the product that lets me notate all the rights information about my music and then upload that to a blockchain. I'm sure some folks have prototype things in this vein, but I'm not aware of any that are like on the market right now.
I've actually seen some of the prototypes and they're really interesting, but I haven't seen anything that's available right this second. So hopefully the prototypes will get built. So you have your hands in a lot of different pies, so to speak, and you are obviously a very busy person. So let's talk about what else you're working on these days. Talk a little bit about your role as the artist in residence at Spotify and what that entails.
I've taken a bit of a step back at Spotify recently as I've been in the process of launching a new investment fund and also getting ready to put out my first solo record on October 16th. So quick plug for that to check it out. But for the past 4 years, I've been deeply engaged at Spotify, and my function as artist in residence has had two components. First, I've been educating the creative community about Spotify's business model and trying to help folks understand that this is not going to ruin their lives. And in fact, it will be a really great thing for artists and creators. And the second thing I've done is be a conduit through which feedback and sort of requests from the artist community can be incorporated into Spotify's strategy. So the company cares a lot about building products that not only make music better for consumers, but also that help artists build and engage their audience in ways that are meaningful to them. And so I've worked on both fronts of the business, and it's been a really gratifying experience to watch the company grow so rapidly over the past 4 or 5 years.
And talk about your investments, because you have this incredibly interesting variety. I mean, you got SpaceX, you got Doctor on Demand, So tell me a little bit about how you've come to work with each of these companies and, you know, a little bit about each of them and what interested you about each of them.
Frankly, I can't take much credit for either of those two investments. In the case of SpaceX, Elon's been a friend for several years, and I just have enormous faith in him and am, like so many others, really inspired by the company's mission. So that wasn't difficult to make a decision about investing in. I'm just extremely bullish on what they're trying to do. And if anyone can achieve such an ambitious vision, it's Elon. And similarly, in the case of Doctor on Demand, I was friends with Adam Jackson, who's the founder of the company. And in that case, I gave them a little bit of money, but I've really gotten so much more back, not only because Adam is an amazing entrepreneur to watch and work with, but also because it was the first introduction I had to thinking about the healthcare industry. And to be honest, I invested in the company just out of faith in Adam, knowing very little about healthcare or the evolving telemedicine space. And over the past 3 years now, since I made that investment, maybe 2.5 years, Adam really inspired me to learn a lot about the healthcare system in America and also more generally about where medicine and healthcare are going as sciences. And those two areas now are among the most interesting places that I look for investments in the world. And I'm really obsessed with healthcare. It's sort of like the only industry you could imagine that is more complicated and screwed up than the music business. And so having cut my teeth a little bit on some of these problems related to media and music, I feel like I have the wherewithal to start thinking about how to thread some needles in healthcare. And, you know, the great thing, like music, is that anything you can do to make it better is really a net win for humanity.
And what about some of the other companies that you've invested in and advised that you've mentioned?
One that's really exciting that coincided with my burgeoning interest in cryptocurrency and decentralized protocols was a company called Ripple Labs. And Ripple is a really exciting company. They have a sort of version of a blockchain of their own, although they use a different mechanic to do it than Bitcoin does. And they're targeted on making it much easier, efficient, and low cost for financial institutions to move money around the world. So they've really been working on creating a sort of internet of value that can sit under the hood of the world's largest financial institutions. And so that also connects back to the question you asked about, you know, how soon will any of this happen? Is it just a pie in the sky vision? A company like Ripple is helping the sort of big infrastructural players in the mainstream financial economy figure out how to leverage these technologies. And my bet is that you'll start seeing these technologies infiltrate the economy at that level, maybe before you even see consumer applications that are valuable to people. Through my involvement with Ripple, I've learned a lot about how you can practically start to wedge these things into really old, creaky infrastructure in the world.
And how do you balance all this with your music career? I mean, you said you have a solo album coming out and you've got other stuff that's out there. How do you, you know, make sure that everything works in a really holistic way?
Well, I'm not sure that it does. And, you know, people surprisingly frequently ask me questions like this as if, you know, I'm doing a really high finesse job of it. But for me, it's always just a daily struggle to figure out what I should spend my time on. And, you know, I love making music, although the value of the music I make, I don't think is primarily measurable in the financial returns that it generates. So what I love about the balance that I have between the art and business sides of my professional life are that in the context of music, the only thing that matters for me is making the most beautiful piece of work that I can. And if I do a good job of that, at least to my own ears, then I've succeeded. And by contrast, when it comes to the investing I do, you can measure outcomes in a number of different ways. And certainly, I look for things that are going to push the world in a really productive and positive direction. But at the end of the day, my ability to grow and succeed as an investor depends upon putting money into things that ultimately work and produce a financial return. And so I'm constantly trying to balance the sort of more idealistic impulses that I have with the more practical ones.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule of making music and investing companies and being a thought leader in Bitcoin and whatever else you're working on to chat with us. If people want to find you online, where can they do that?
They can find me at my website, which is dawallach.com, dawallach.com, or I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/dawallach, same for Instagram, and I think I'm on Facebook as facebook.com/davidandrewwallach, which is my full name that my mom calls me, and I look forward to seeing some folks who are hopefully listeners here on any of those places.
That's all for this episode of the Music Biz Podcast. Thank you to Hypebot for helping us put this show out. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please send me an email at kyle.bylin@gmail.com. That's kyle.bylin@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion.